Good morning, Australia. Good evening, America. You're back listening to Radio Tony, and this is a conversation with Kez. Just a reminder that anything that we speak about on the show is available on radiotony.com. And if you look under the co-host section, you'll see all the information about the beautiful Kez Wickham St. George. Just a reminder too that the replays of these shows are available on Binge TV networks across the USA and on the Tony TV channel app on all Roku, LG and Samsung TVs across the world. And those links are also available on radiotony.com. So Kez Wickham St. George is an international best-selling author and mentor and book coach. And she's also very creative because she paints as well. And today we thought that we would discuss the writer's journey in general and talk about all the sorts of avenues that open up to you once you decide to write. And we're not just talking about books. Before we started the show, though, Kez and I were talking about the current state of lockdown across Australia. So I think Western Australia has marginally avoided lockdown at the moment. Queensland, where I am on the east coast of Australia, is in lockdown until Sunday. And New South Wales, also on the east coast of Australia, is in lockdown until the end of August. So speaking of lockdowns, it's an opportune time to write. And so we're going to encourage your creativity and passion today and talk about the things that you can do and where your writing can take you. So Kez, once you become a published author, what then?
Well, good morning, Tony.
Good morning, too. I'm so sorry.
It's all right.
We talked before the show and I forget that the audience don't know. Good morning.
That's all right.
Welcome back.
So, my author's journey after being published, well, there's so many roads it can take you down. I was at Crom Castle in Ireland, as a writer. Now, I got invited to go over there as a guest speaker and talk about my writing. And I wasn't the only one. There was about 15 of us, all authors, all well-published authors, new authors, artists. There was a whole bunch of us, all mixed on genre. And what the retreat did at the Crom Castle was, we all had a chance to talk to an author called Monica McInerney. And she's a lovely,
a wonderful
lovely
Irish name.
Yeah, well, she's married to an Irish. I think she's an Australian, married to an Australian.
Oh, okay.
An Irishman. But also I had a chance to have a very long conversation with Jane Talbot, who is also a very, very well-known author. Now, Jane I just felt like I was her sister. She was so welcoming. So was the other authors, but
yes.
Jane just had a way about her. I know she's a counsellor, and she does so much for a lot of other authors. But they both agreed that another path for me would be writing for magazines, and I sort of poo-hooed the idea for a while because I'm not a journalist. But
yes.
Lo and behold, I came back and it was in the back of my mind. So I toured through Europe before I came home, and then it was in the back of my mind the whole time, and I was collecting stories as I went right through Europe into the older parts of Spain and Italy and places like that, really old ruins, and I was collecting stories. And when I got home, I thought, I'm going to give it a shot. And lo and behold, I now write for three magazines. Not regularly. They'll pop in and say, have you got an article for us? But recently got published with the EYS magazine. And
I know. How exciting is that?
It was amazing. Amazing to be. Now, I cannot say Jasmina's surname without slurring and sounding like I've had a few drinks. but it's Jasmina Savosky, I think that's the way you say it. A beautiful,
Okay.
beautiful woman who has said to me a couple of times, would you like something in the magazine? Because she knows they do a lot of humanitarian work, or do a
Yeah.
lot of mentoring and radio work
Yes.
to encourage people to do
Yes.
art and write. So, yeah, three magazines. And I never ever saw myself on that road, of writing for a magazine, thinking I'm not a journalist. But they've actually got nothing to do with it. You know, they want to
That's
know you.
right.
They want to know all
They
about
do.
you. So apart from being a published author, that one connection of being published, I've been invited to many, many retreats now to talk on
Yes.
writing. That one at Crom was a very special one. With COVID, we're not going overseas
Yes.
anymore, but I certainly get
Yeah.
invited in WA to talk about writing and
Yes.
art, because I'm also an artist.
Yeah.
And you know, the way I encourage people is give it a go. You won't know until you give it a go. You know, and sometimes, like,
Yeah.
I've written for a magazine and they've said, we can't use your article this month, but maybe in 2 months' time we'll pop it in. So there's always
Yeah.
that way. And it's always a volunteer situation. You don't get paid for these things, you know. So,
Yeah.
but your name gets out there as an author, a
It
writer,
does.
and a humanitarian, you know. So the journey, and then there's the filmmaking, you know, that was another, and you've got to learn to
Yes.
ask the questions. So from
Yeah.
asking a question, I'm now having a film done of the anthology, sorry, not the anthology, the first chapter of the next book, which is out in November. So
Yeah.
there's public speaking, there's writing for magazines, there's writing for newspapers, there's visiting, you know, you get asked to visit many, many places and say your piece about writing or art. And I just find the world is a very different place. It's not what you
Yeah.
thought it was. There's a lot of people out there wanting the knowledge. While we're on lockdown, you know, people forget to watch how their kids play. They forget to watch how the animals play. And it's all a story. Even animals will tell
Yes.
you a story. So
Yes.
put it on, you know, write it down, log it somewhere so that you don't have to be a published author down my road. It's a memory for family.
Absolutely. Kez, before I ask you the next question, can you tell the audience about the journey to the movie? Because that's a really special story as well. Because the movie actually has come about before the next book's actually released. So it's in the process and you've written it, but it's not launched yet. And the movie sort of happened simultaneously to that process as well, didn't it?
It was a question. It was just, you know, I have in the beginning of the book, the scene
Yes.
opens up with one of my books being shown as a movie. And the idea
Yes.
stuck in my head. Why can't it be a
Yeah.
movie? Why can't? Why can't
Yeah.
it? Give me a reason. And this is what people forget to ask. You've said no. Can I have a reason? Or you've said yes. Woohoo, away we go. So they forget to ask
Yeah.
the questions. It's so important. It's like you and I, Tony. It's like we ask questions before
Yeah.
we work together. We ask
Yeah.
our questions. So
Yes.
I asked the question of a well-known short, what they call a short movie producer. I invited her around for lunch. She only lives around the corner from me in Rockingham in Perth.
Yes.
And I've associated with Sally Newman before. So we
Yeah.
knew each other. I said, can we catch up for a cup of tea? And we caught up for a cup of tea and then lunch.
Yeah.
And she said to me, she said, give me the script. I will have to change a
Yes.
few things, but I will look at it and I will
Yeah.
give you my answer. So she sent
Yeah.
me her answer. And I sort of just got on with working. I mean, this is what
Yes.
you don't hang on a sky hook, because
Wait
it's of no
around.
use to you. You know, you just get on work, or you get on with your family, and you know, you carry on with your day. So I did. I carried on for a couple of
Yes.
weeks just doing what I
Yeah.
do. And then she got back to me and saying, can we have catch up for another cup of tea? Sure. And I, you know, me being, I'm a pessimist by nature. I thought there's a refusal coming here. And I was quite prepared for it. So when she said to me, I'd love to carry on with you and make this into a movie, I think I sat there for 5 minutes not speaking and thinking, oh, what do we do now? And she said, well, to use your story, I'm going to have to turn it in to a script, which means changing some of the words. And I had to agree to that. Now, as a writer, this is your baby. You don't like words changed. You know, when when you have the book edited, proofread.
That's bad enough.
Well, they should ask your permission before they change anything. A lot of people don't. A lot of professionals don't bother. I work with a beautiful editor. Yeah, they don't. So, and a lot of people don't bother to proofread or edit. They do it themselves and put it out on Amazon, and then you've got a book full of mistakes. So I asked a fabulous editor, her name's Julia Kaylock, what did she think? She said, I'll do it at this certain amount of fee that they all charge. And she also looked at the editor looked at the script writing and she approved it.
Yes.
And to have two professionals say, that's great, and away we went.
Your writing is pretty spectacular though, Kez. So we are, your writing's up there. And you might not have believed that it would make a script, but, you know, for those of us that know you know how good your writing is. I'm so delighted and delightedly happy for you that this has come about. And again, just wondering, was it okay for them to change the wording? Did it impact on what you...
It hurt.
Okay.
It hurts. Yes. When you see your words changed, not deleted, but changed so that the actors can use them on site. So the actors are given, it's a very short little, it's a 20-minute movie. So the actors, it's what wasn't changed, and I was really happy about that, it was the scenery.
Yes.
Because I love to write glorious sceneries about the sunsets.
Yes.
And sunrise, sunset, bush scenes, and that's the part of writing I really enjoy, is describing that sort of stuff. Yeah. That wasn't changed. So what people don't realise is the film expert, Sally Newman, she's had to trudge the benches waiting for that right moment for that I've described, because she wouldn't change the writing. She said, I don't want to change it. So, you know, she sent me photos of herself drenched by the odd wave. Oh, the poor woman, she's gone through hell for me. So, you know, she's not... His shoes have been ruined. She's been drenched up to the neck with waves. You know, the rogue wave caught her. But that's what they do.
But she's searching for the scene that you've described in your writing, though. So so that scene that's come from your beautiful imaginative mind and you've written down on paper, she's trying to recapture that in real life so she can put it into the movie.
That's right.
And do you think that she's found it? Space?
Once you sign that contract, you leave it in their hands.
You've got to hand it over. Oh, my God. How do you do that?
It's hard. It's like, I could feel the chin wobbling and the bottom lip sort of giving a bit of a quiver, and I thought, oh, this is my baby.
Yeah.
But,
it's
just, if you want this to happen, you've got to be willing.
You've got to let it go.
Take professional advice, and if you don't, they will say, next, please. That's the business life on the writing side. If you don't walk with professionals, you call yourself a professional, and if you don't take their advice, they're going to say, well, I don't want my name on that book or on that movie or whatever. Yeah. So It pays to listen to the advice you're given. You know, when I mentor, I do the same thing. I give advice on how they could actually make it sound better or include another conversation. I'm not an editor. I'm not a proofreader. But that's, you know, as you're going through the book, you do pick that up very quickly and you start making comments. So, you know, all that comes into it. So, you know, to work with me, you get a light proofreading, you get a light editing. But the concept of the book will be thoroughly studied and changed if need be.
That and that's about putting out a wonderful product that is delivered in a way that is, you know, it's not it's done at a professional standard. The editing's done at a professional standard, and it therefore you have a good book at the end of it, which is why you not only write but you mentor writers and as well, because you want to help them deliver the best book possible. And sometimes that means challenging what they've written or what their thoughts were and making it better. You can't look very effectively at your own work. You actually need that other person to read it and edit it because you miss so much because it's in your head. It's in your, you know, and that third person will give you the better perspective and therefore make it a better book.
That's right.
Kez, when you first, looking back to when you first started writing and started your writing journey, did you, other than advice from professional editors, did you seek any other sort of advice around your writing journey or you just sat down and started writing and to see where it would lead?
That's what I did. I was in a little wee place called Cloncurry,
yeah,
which is the end of the earth. There's nothing there. And I was, there's nothing there. There was three shops.
No, I know.
And a library.
Except Australian Survivor apparently is being filmed in Cloncurry. Did you know that?
No, I did not. Wow. Love Cloncurry. Yeah. It's a beautiful place. But I was living in the mine, you know, the mining camp. Yeah. I was living in there with the single men or woman. And I was a married woman and living in married quarters, but surrounded by single people that got up at 4 a.m. and trudged off to work. And I was there on my own. There it was then, this is going back a few years, there was no Wi-Fi anywhere. You had to go into town, into the library and use their Wi-Fi if the library wasn't flooded. And I was there during monsoon.
Wet season's not fun because out there for our American listeners, it's big, flat, open. And so when it rains a lot and it stays flooded for a long time because there's nowhere for the water to go because it's just like a big flat inland plain. And yes, Kez is right. When it floods out there, it really floods.
Well, the library used to get flooded, so the Wi-Fi was out. So I don't know. I don't know how I did it. When I look back now, that I was covered in red mud from top to toe for 24/7 trying to find places. And of course, my husband was working in the mine, so if I wanted to go anywhere, I had to go on my own. And I had a four-wheel drive. The company gave me a four-wheel drive. And away I went, exploring. I had no idea how to drive a four-wheel drive. Again, there's a book in there. I learned how to drive through thick, red, gooey mud, through the road trains there are so scary.
Grass.
Oh, hate it. Hate that stuff.
It's just horrible stuff.
horrible stuff. And I must have met, you know, I come from New Zealand. So it's full of the cutest little animals. But over here, you've got some really weird, weird looking, these great big stalky things in the field. And I remember stopping and thinking, what on earth? It's not a stork. It was like this big bird. It looked like a bit of a pelican was there as well. It was enormous. It was enormous. And there were a bulgar. It was called a bulgar stork.
Yeah, a brolga.
Okay. Big. Never seen one before. Mm-hmm. Finally fascinated. I'd never seen a cane toad. I'd never seen a globe spider. They're enormous. So I was battling these things on my own. Again, I wrote about it. I mean, what can you do? But I also put them into a children's book and found that very interesting too. But again, there was no place I could go to have it looked at. The librarian was quite a senior. So she did her job and went home, went to sleep, I think. And then there was, I had to drive through to Mount Isa, which was a 3-hour drive away.
Yeah.
But this is what you do when you want to be a writer. You do the extra mile for yourself. So I drove to Mount Isa and I had everything on a thumb drive, got to Mount Isa to the printer who I'd rung on the way there and arranged a meeting, and the thumb drive was corrupted. So I had nothing. I had nothing. So what I had to do was 3 hours drive back through the rain.
Yes.
Make another appointment, grab my laptop and take that in, and you took everything off it. Now I had to do this was for family only, my very first experience of getting out there as a writer. I had it all printed up. It looked really beautiful. It was all children's stories about the little animals and these big creatures I saw. And I took it to the – I went to the out that night to a hotel for a meal, and the publican bought 30 copies off me to sell on the pub. That was my first sale.
Oh, Kez.
I know.
That's amazing.
Yeah, she bought 30 copies.
That's an amazing story.
Yeah.
Having lived in Mount Isa, I can actually get a very good visual idea of, you know, the pubs in Mount Isa and the publicans. They're kind of friendly characters. And I have a vision of the publican buying your books. That's fantastic.
So she was in,
I guess.
Her name was Mary, and she was in Cloncurry.
Yes.
And she bought 30 copies of me at $20 a copy, and that cleared my printing bill. That cleared my printing bill right up, and I was happy with that.
Yeah.
And then the contract for the mining ended. My husband was on drove the convoy back to Perth, and I flew to New Zealand, and I took all the books with me. I took any extra books with me, and again, sold them. Yeah. I wasn't intending to sell them. I was intending to give them to family. But the library over there picked it up and said, we can do something with it. So there was half a dozen copies sold in New Zealand, as well as given to families. So that was my first journey into writing. And it wasn't the money experience.
This is pretty good.
I know. It wasn't the money experience.
It was the creative experience.
Yeah, it was the what I'd actually, where I'd been and what I'd done to collect the stories. Because I'm a suburbs girl. You know, I've lived in the country a lot, but here in Perth I live in the suburbs. Going to Cloncurry and given a 4-wheel drive and the keys and saying enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
And I wave goodbye to my husband as he goes off to the mines. And I won't say what went through my mind, but it wasn't very nice. It was like, oh, I want to go home. So 6 months there. I drove all over the country. That was my first experience at learning how to collect stories and turning it into a children's book. And this is what I find people are missing today. They're in lockdown. Mm. And my heart goes out to them. But here's the time to have an experience. Watch the kids playing. Yes. And if you haven't got kids or grandkids, then, you know, watch what the animal's doing. Make up a story. It's not hard. You know, what is that? You know, if you see a bird in a tree, what's the bird doing? What's the bird saying? What's it singing? You know, what's it telling you? You know, I just find, to me, it's always been very easy to pick up a story and go with it. For some people that are totally logical, I'm creative, but for others that are logical, it's really hard. And it's time now to put the logic aside and be creative.
Absolutely. Because in getting yourself out there, and if you think back to the start of that journey and where you are now, because I know what you're like now, but I'm curious to know whether about approaching people and how you approach people. So how you went about approaching the publican in Cloncurry, for instance, and how you've gone about approaching. We've heard about the story, the wonderful story about the script writer. What are the instances of approaching people and the results and how you did that? Because you're a bit more outgoing than me.
No, I don't believe so. No, I don't believe so. It's asking the question and not being frightened of the answer. That's where it all lies.
Yeah.
You know, don't be frightened of who you are and what you are. If you're a creative, you're going to paint your little fingers off. You're going to write them off, you know. You can't stop. But some people, I just see the blockage there that, I'm a whatever. I'm an office worker. I'm a retailer. I'm in business. Well, I'm in business too. But I deal with people that want to be creative. You know, I went to an arts retreat as a teacher last week, and again, the question was asked, how can you be a writer and an artist? And I said, why not? I can be anything I want to be. Anything I want to be. If I want to be a nail technician, then I'll go and learn to be a nail technician.
How to do nails. You know,
anyone can do what they want to do and ask that question. The reason that lady, the publican, bought that many books off me is I had one on me. And I was shaking in my boots, shaking. And I said to my husband, I can't do this. He says, you can do anything you want to do. You can do it. So he went and had a beer with the mates, cold beer, you do in Australia. He had a beer with his mates.
Yes.
And I was in, they still had a lady snug in the pub. Believe it or not, in this day and age, they had a snug. So I was in the snug. And I went and talked to the manageress of the pub, and she owned it. And I said to Mary, she said, what sort of day have you had? And I produced my book, Perfect Cue.
Yes.
And she went, oh, my God, I love this sort of stuff. So, it was an immediate sale. It wasn't the money. It was knowing that someone was going to read my book.
Yeah.
And it was only 20 pages. And I had taken photographs of all the animals. And my husband took his time one day when he had a day off to show me how to transfer the photos onto the book. So it was all this learning process that went on for me, and it was like, I can do this.
Yeah.
It's believing in yourself, Tony.
Absolutely.
I mean, look at the work you do. I mean, I would never dream of being a radio host. I'm a co-host because you do all the work. I just pop online and have a chat. But look what you do, and look at the people, the hearts you've touched. Look at the people you interview, and what do? You ask the questions. Is that not right?
Yeah, absolutely, because I'm innately interested in their stories and their experience, because I think that empowers others, it helps others, it connects to other human beings, and anything that connects and helps you through life is a good thing. And having the courage to ask the questions, having the courage to then tell your story. And I like to think that Radio Tony and Tony TV is that safe space for people to talk openly and honestly about their stories. And again, it's about the story of life. It's about Kez's stories. It's about Tony's stories. It's about people's stories. We used to, if you think back to, you know, millennia ago, when people were in tribes of communities, their stories were passed down through generations and generations, and they stayed within those tribes. We're very segmented in the modern world, and we don't have that community unless we actively create it for ourselves. That's which is what both Kez and I try to do, is create relationships with people in and around us, and we support them and champion them and empower them to do what they do, be who they're meant to be. And that's a wonderful thing. That's actually a privilege, isn't it, Kez?
It is. Excuse me. It's I love helping people shine. That's one thing I really, really love. And you're the same, Tony.
Absolutely.
You love helping people shine their light. And no matter what the light is, whether it be art or whether it be in a book, magazine, journaling, whatever they write, you know, I meet all sorts in my road, you know, all sorts of people that write all sorts of books. And the only thing, you can't write it for them, you can only encourage them.
No.
What you're doing is amazing. By encouraging people to come on the TV and talk about their books and talk about what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And talk about their artwork, talk about their exhibitions, talk about their creativity. Where did they get these ideas from?
Yeah. I'm really looking forward. Next week I have another series of co-hosted shows coming up with an international artist who has provided the artwork for the Oscar nominees each year for the last 3 years. She's an incredible artist, and we're going to be following her journey because it's not something she was always an artist, but she didn't always have that as her full-time role. So I'm going to talk a little bit about her journey and her courage to just step out of her normal life and into the life of an artist. And it does take courage to live your life's passion, but you can see the creativity oozes from her pores. Much like you, Kez, with your writing and your artwork, it just oozes. It's something that drives both of you that you have to do and that you're meant to do. It's your passion and it's, you know, your life. Kez, going back to how you approach people and get yourself out there, can you tell the audience some of the more fun things you've done to get yourself out there?
Oh, my goodness, fun things I've done. So wherever I travel, and it hasn't been very far, this particular COVID
nonsense.
So what we've done is we travel around WA. We have a caravan. Mm. Now, my dream in my whole life is to have that caravan full of books and to pop off anywhere I want to and give a talk about writing, maybe sell a couple of books. It might pay for the gas, but just encourage people to write. So to me, it's not about the sales. It's not about fame or fortune. It's about watching people say, I can do that. I can do that. If she's doing it, I can do it. That's what I love to see. Give them a challenge. Yes. So that's been my dream. And I can do it. I can't do it all the time because I do work from home a lot. So what I've been doing is when I invited out to retreats, we take the caravan with us and we'll stay for a week if we can. And I introduce myself to the libraries. Now, last time I was in a beautiful spot called Margaret River, introduced myself to the library. She bought all my books and asked me to go and talk that night. She rang up everybody. I didn't know she'd done this. She'd rung up all the people she could think of. And there was about 10 people there that night. Now, out of those 10 people, two people began to work with me with their children's books because they didn't know how to in the first place.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes. So that's how it works. You know, I can be, you often get refusals. It's not all hay and sunshine. It really isn't. You often get refusals.
Oh, yeah.
No, thank you. I was in Albany. I was in Albany about 3 months ago. Again, a week in the caravan, and the newspaper wouldn't have anything to do with me. The local bookshop said go away, and it was all about my whole journey was all about Albany. But the radio took me on board, and I rang them, told them what I was doing, and they said come on in. So I went in, and we had a chat on the radio. And next thing you know, I've got, would you like to come to this luncheon and give a talk? And So that's the way it works. You know, if once you are very sure of yourself and whatever you do, whether you're an artist, writer, you clip toenails, I don't know what you do for a living, but the opportunities are out there. You've just got to ask questions and not be frightened.
Right.
I mean, I get scared. I think, oh, they're really famous.
Yes.
They're really famous people. What am I doing with approaching them? And then I realize, hang on a minute, you're a best-selling author, you're international, you've got some kudos to you as well. But it's taken a wee while, just like you with your radio stations and your TV.
Yes,
you build up. So so what you do, Tony, is amazing.
Thank you. Discovering in my mid 50s that I had a love of talking to people and interviewing people live on air was not anything that I could have foreseen or thought of in any of my life plans. But to have that privilege of talking to people and telling their stories is really quite an amazing thing. And I know that it lights me up to have those conversations, and it drives my passion forward to tell people's stories and get them across the world in a bigger way. Because I have a fundamental belief that Kez's story is unique and wonderful, and there are people out there that can only receive their help, their knowledge and their wisdom from Kez Wickham St. George. They're not going to hear it from Tony. They're going to hear it from Kez. And so the more you help other people do that, the better it is. So if you take your children's books, for instance, if you hadn't had the courage to just step out and write and then get those books printed, you wouldn't have that experience, and you wouldn't then be able to now be helping people write their own children's books. And, of course, children's books are incredibly important because children in their first 7 years of life gain all the fundamental skills that they will use across a lifetime. And if books and learning is a fundamental part of that first 7 years, effectively you're shaping and help teach the next generation of children. So that's where children's books sit. That's how important they are.
Okay.
And whatever age that you write for, it's important, isn't it, Kez?
There is a definite missing in education and children's books. There is, I always find a definite, there seems to be like we go up to seven and then the storytelling stops until they can understand it at 12. So what I would ask anyone that's going to write a children's story is aim for that age group. You know, if you have
that eight to 12 age group.
Yeah. We all, as you said, our brains are pretty sharp by the time we're seven. We're on a learning curve. But we still need stories. Now, my past is in tribalhood where my aunties and uncles would tell stories. Nothing was written down. I remembered them. So when my mother and father told me stories about their past, what they used to get up to as teenagers, I used to think, that you're too old to be doing stuff like that. But they were... And now when I tell a story, my grandchildren say to me, did you really do those things? And yes, I did. I really did. And I was to tell stories is the best thing in the whole world. It's been going on since the cavemen, telling of stories, passing on the information, passing on the education of your family and your past.
Yeah.
It's very important. I'm actually in the middle of researching my maternal grandparents. I have no idea.
Yes.
And funny enough, they came out on a sailing ship to Christchurch, and guess what their names were?
Yes.
Rose and Jack.
Oh, you're kidding.
No,
Kez.
I'm not. No. Rose and
Jack.
Oh,
my
Wisdom.
God, you couldn't write?
Well, no, but I have written.
Wow.
See, this is what I knew. What I knew their life story, sort
yeah.
of. I didn't know the ending.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know why they came out. Were they on a criminal boat? Mm. Did they offend? Did they steal
yes.
bread like the Irish? I didn't know any of that. So the yes. first chapter in my new book is about Rose mm-hmm. and Jack. Now, I can't use those mm-hmm. names. So I use Rose and Patty.
Yes.
But I don't know how they came out here. I know they came on a 19th century coal blowing sailing ship thingy.
Right.
Came out of.
Yes, yes, yes.
And
so a big boat.
Yeah, big boat with immigrants from England and Ireland.
Yeah.
Now, mm-hmm. my mother mm-hmm. said she was an English Jew. So
right.
where the Jew came from, I don't know. So all this research, and I'm learning so much about my history that goes back, way, way back, why I have this undeniable interest in herbalism.
Okay.
Well, herbalism is in my family. But why do I have an interest
uh-huh.
in it? I don't know. I will find out with research.
You'll find out. What avenues are you using to get that research? I'm curious because I did
curious.
This exercise in December.
Okay.
Yeah, I
so
did this exercise in December.
Okay. So, first of all, there's family and there's very few
yes.
of us left, right?
Yes.
So we've all got grandchildren and great-grandchildren. So
yes,
the stories of my youth out there, but the stories
mm-hmm.
of my parents' youth and their so
yes.
I've had to research on many different platforms, but also ask
mm-hmm.
family that are still surviving because I'm the baby in the family.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine
yes.
that I've had to search for family that I haven't been in contact. They don't even know who I am. Because we've cousins, we sort of they left New Zealand, they went global. So I have cousins all over the world, and I've slowly
yeah.
had to research them, find out where they are, go to that person, then
yeah.
go down another road and go to that person. And the other one
yeah.
is now what's that company you can go to? I've forgotten its name.
Ancestry.com.
Yeah, Ancestry.com. Yeah. I went to
mm-hmm.
them and they are looking.
Mm-hmm.
I've already found out my paternal grandparents, but I'm writing about my maternal. And I feel like there's a force field
yes.
saying, do this. So, yeah, I know I've got to do it. And so that will be the very next book after this, after the one for the movie is out, there will be another trilogy. Out about
Jack and Rose, or Jack
yeah.
and sorry, Rose and Patty.
Well, no, Rose and Patty are in this book coming out, but I can use their real
okay.
names as long as it's a real
yeah.
scenario. I can use their real names
mm-hmm.
as long as I use their
mm-hmm.
surname. So, if anybody's listening
yes.
and knows Jack and Rose Preston from the early 1900s and you're still around, contact me.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's important. It's
important. Did they come from Ireland or England?
England, Kent.
They come from England, Kent in England. Okay.
Yeah.
Because
so
I know
I'm told.
I know when I was using Ancestry.com in December to trace back my heritage, and obviously there was that going from Australia back to England, Ireland, and Scotland. But then from that point, they go back 10 generations of Danish relatives.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I know, which may be where my love of snow and cold comes from, if it's,
ooh.
You know, 10 generations genetically Danish. But I've never been to Denmark. And so I'm curious now and would one day love to go and just check out those particular relatives. So
Yes.
that genetic line is on my father's mother's lineage. And it
Okay.
goes back 10 generations Danish, and then the final generation back in the 1400s was Swedish. That's quite a
Okay.
long line to go back, but imagine what stories that if you could just talk to someone back in the 15th century, what an amazing conversation that would be.
I know. But it's the research that you do, and writing a children's book is different. It's keeping the words simple so the kids can understand it, and it's a children's story. But if you're writing, and this is what I adore about writing, I can do research all day long. My mother always said she was an Irish Jew. I didn't understand the Jewish. So far, I found no records of any Jewish, but now I understand my fascination with Palestine, Israel, all that. I have an absolute fascination, and there's a relative of mine that has just worked over there, and they were telling me all about it. And I thought, I actually feel like you're telling me something I already know. So that could be like the memories. I don't know how this works. I'm not an expert on this, but apparently, the DNA
Your
from my mother.
DNA, it carries in your DNA. So it's established now that trauma is carried through your DNA. So there
That's right.
is no reason why familiarity around times and places would not be part of your DNA as well. I know when I flew into Edinburgh, Scotland, the first time, I had a moment where the hair stood up on the back of my neck and I felt like I was coming home. Even talking to you now, I can feel the hairs raising on my arms. So I absolutely know that I knew before I did any research that there had to be some sort of Scottish connection there. So I think that DNA and tracing that DNA is really important for a lot of people. And then once you've got that connection, then it's about the stories and the lives and what you can find out. And I was surprised to know that there are still records going back, to the 14th and 15th century in terms of births, deaths, and marriage, which I thought was just so fascinating. And of course, when you get into the 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries, you can find things like rental ledgers and tax information and real estate, which is incredibly fascinating from my perspective. Because so then you can, if you can't find the story, then your curiosity goes to, well, why did they buy that property there in that part of Kent? Or what was the reason behind their shift from the UK to New Zealand? And what was the thought process? I think that we now have that opportunity to write down those stories for our great great grandchildren so they can read and know them. And the other thing is too, and part of the reason why I love broadcast media so much is that legacy will live on. So my great great grandchildren will be able to look up and see Nana Tony on a YouTube channel. How amazing is that? So, hello, future great great grandchildren. Much love from Nanny Tony. And it's the same with books, isn't it, Kez? Your great great grandchildren will be able to go, Nana Kez wrote this back in 2020, and this is what she wrote about. It's an amazing legacy contribution to humanity as well, isn't it?
That's how I look upon writing what I do. Instead of the children's books, when I write about like Rose and Paddy, and then write about my journey, every time I go somewhere, I log it so that I can make up a story about it, whether it's fiction or non-fiction. But that's the reason what brought me into writing was that my family, I was the baby, so my family were dying off really quickly, and they were aged.
Yes.
You know, they were in their 80s and 90s. So I thought, I've got to do something. I've got to log something in here. I've got to make sure that I have 5 grandchildren, and one of them's has children herself. So I'm a great grandmother as well.
Yeah.
So just knowing that perhaps one day that book will be opened and read, and this is what my great grandmother or my great great grandmother wrote about her life in Australia and her life of a successful life. You know, what was it about? Yes. My DNA of being a creator, a writer, an artist will flow on. I know my son's a poet. My third daughter loves to etch glass. She's very artistic in etching glass. I wouldn't even dream of doing that myself, but she comes up with these beautiful creations on glass, and she's often asked to do like celebrations for weddings and that.
Yes.
You know, my youngest daughter is into the wedding field. She's creative, and she creates these beautiful wedding scenarios for people to get married in. So they're all creative in their own way. That's the DNA coming down. That's what I write about.
It is.
Is where the DNA sits. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
And do you think that you'll find in your research where that creativity come from? Do you think that you will find painters, artists, writers, scribes back in that 18th, 19th century? Yeah.
I know my granddad Jack, I was 6 months old when he died, so I don't really knew anything about him. He was a carpenter. He designed and made his own work. I do know that about him. So therefore, creativity.
So are we talking tables and chairs type situation or cupboards?
He made box, like expandable boxes. And I used to have one when I left New Zealand. When I left New Zealand, I gave it to my eldest girl. Remember the old button boxes? You pull the drawers out and they go for miles?
Yes.
He used to make those.
Yes.
That's all I know.
Oh, okay.
But obviously he would have made other stuff. Yeah.
And
my mum, was a songwriter and a poet, and she won prizes for it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's
seriously cool. And so have you discovered this in conversations with your relatives, or you've actually been able to find newspaper, books, that sort of research?
No, through experience with my mother. I knew that she was a wedding frock maker. She designed and made wedding frocks in the early years. But she would sing. She would make up songs and sing and make up little ditties. And if anyone was having a bad day, Mum would make up a ditty for it. If anyone knows what it is, it's a rhyme. So it's a 4-sentence rhyme, a ditty. Yeah. So, my dad was a dreamer. He dreamt of castles in the air. He was the one that taught me how to make grass angels, how to look in the sky and look at the clouds. Oh. He was the one that took me aside and said, look what I can see. And I could never see what he saw. I saw something totally different. Oh. So when he saw a castle, I'd see a horse. But he would say to me, look into the sky and let all the worry go away. And he taught me how to make, I mean, he taught me how to talk to animals. My dad was man of many means, but it was mum. I guess they were both creative. My dad was an Irishman. So how on earth they got married, I do not know. It was definitely fire and ice in our house.
Fair enough. Yeah. Like, see, the when you think of the Irish, you think they've got a very creative folklore as well around, you know, leprechauns and four-leaf clover. So they are very creative, generally speaking, the Irish and happy and all the rest of it. Oh, amazing. Because I can't wait to hear what you find out. I think it's going to be fantastic.
Well, through family, family gossip, I learned that my mother's family were Druids. That's all I know. What sort, I don't know, but I would like to know more. Yeah, they were Druids. Absolutely. In the Druid world. So I don't know any more than that.
Oh, amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
Because we are out of time again. What a wonderful conversation to have this morning about writer's journey and where it takes. We probably need to go back to the topic of research at some stage to run through the sequence of processes you follow when you research something, but we're out of time today. Thank you so much for co-hosting the show with me again today and opening up about all of your stories and your research, your upcoming book and the movie. audience, Kez and I will be back next week in another session of Conversation with Kez. We hope that you'll join us. Thanks for listening. And that is your lot for this week. Bye, Kez. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye for now. Bye.